Yeah, it's Pulse with the sports. You don't need another report. Bleed in green till I D-I-E. Hold it down for the best team. We in first place, we the Celtics. Try to shoot it, we ain't let ya. Finna go and win a ring. Giving fades like I'm Kyrie. You the opposition, can't score yet. Homie, you ain't even on the floor yet. Big buckets and big shots. Better check the time on the shot clock. Got my shooters on me, they wet you up. It's a 30-footer, I ain't letting up. Scary Terry with the dancing bear. Gonna light it up like it ain't fair. Dunk it on you like Rozier. Fourth quarter, we in fifth gear. I got Tatum, I got Brown. I got Marcus locking you down. Grab a broom, it's a sweep. Score 100 on our feet. Celtics Pulse, we the team. And we don't accept defeat, yeah.
Welcome back to another episode of the Celtics Pulse Podcast, and today's episode is brought to you by Thrive Fantasy, a new prop betting app that if you use the code PULSE in-app, they will double your first deposit. And we are also brought to you by Podcoin, a new app where you can listen to podcasts and make some money while you are doing it. You can check out our podcast on there, a bunch of other great podcasts, and another place you can find a lot of quality podcasts, a lot of NBA coverage and other teams will be on the network that we are part of, the Pulse Podcast Network. But hopping into the episode today, we got myself, Brendan, and Cody.
Howdy, howdy.
How you doing, man?
Doing well. How are you?
Doing good. Would be doing better if we were talking about some victories.
Yes. Heartfelt losses the last time we spoke.
Yeah, we were coming off of that Atlanta win, and now we got two top teams in the league. Number two seed in the West, and what is the number three seed, I believe, in the East. And we could start with that Denver game. I have to admit that I cried at the tribute video. And it wasn't the video itself. It was seeing the ovation after in the look in Isaiah's face. It got to
yep. Me. Yeah, no, I obviously, you know, Isaiah Thomas is always going to be a legend around Boston. And, you know, for his short time here, he really did embody, you know, the city of Boston and the, you know, the you can't do it, but doing it anyway type of smash mouth basketball and just getting it done and making no excuses, you know, is what the city sort of, a lot of their sport, the great sports teams embody that. And the good players embody that mold and embody those values. And Isaiah might have done it better than almost anyone to ever put on a Boston uniform, regardless of the sport. I mean, 5'9", and a first, second team All-NBA, scoring 30 points a game and leading, you know, just the way he did it. And to see him come back and get some minutes, he did fall out of the rotation. But he got 7 minutes in the second quarter. Didn't score, but was looking to pass. And it was nice seeing him out there, and the tribute video was heart-wrenching. Yes, it was.
Yeah. I saw a description on some sort of social media saying that with Isaiah, it was like he was blowing your mind every time that he got a bucket. And it was just like, how is this guy doing this? The way he used contact, that entire season, I just remember every time he scored being like, how is this guy doing this? But then when you watch with Kyrie, you're just like, oh, it's Kyrie Irving. Like, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think both players give you that sense of, wow. Like, I can't believe there's a human being on the planet that can do what he just did. And with Isaiah, you know, Kyrie just does it with the flash and the fanciness and the,
you smooth,
know, the handles like, and the, yes. And the
he avoids contact.
The yeah, and just he's so slippery, and that's, it's like, wow, like there's a human being that can contort their body to do that. And with Isaiah, it was this 5'9" guy, smaller than me, and he would just run at these 7-footers, and they couldn't block it. And he would use his shoulder and his body, and he'd get in and push these strong dudes just back 3 feet and then fade away and flick it up. And it was just like...
And then flex on them.
And then flex and then hit the free throw because he shot like 90%. Yeah. He's dope. And it was just, it was two different levels of awe. And I love seeing Isaiah back.
Yeah. And sadly, the Celtics lost that, obviously, but I was so caught up in the Isaiah story. Just, he was standing the entire time. At the beginning of the game, I couldn't find him on the Nuggets bench and was really confused. And it's because he was standing off on the side. He was standing the entire game. And anytime like Marcus, Al, or Jalen ran by, they were all just talking crap. It was great. But like you said, only played, what do you end up with, 7 minutes, didn't score, only shot twice, sadly. I really wanted, he had 1-3 off a dribble, I want to say it was, that I really wanted to go in. But Millsap had a really nice game for them with 12 points, 11 rebounds. Jokic did what Jokic does. 21 points, 13 rebounds, and 7 assists.
Yep.
It wasn't a Jamal Murray show or really necessarily a Kyrie show, kind of like we expected. And I say that and he had 30 points, but it just, the Celtics, there was time where there wasn't hustle. And Denver moving the ball well just was able to get past a Celtics defense that didn't look like they were fully locked in.
Yeah, defensively, especially at the end, is really killed. Killed the Celtics. I mean, in the beginning of the first quarter, I think it was like 4-4 with like 5 minutes gone. And you're like, oh, okay, I guess these two teams are going to play defense all game. And then Nuggets were on a little run, and the Celtics caught up. And then towards the, in the fourth quarter, I believe it was tied going into the fourth quarter, or just like a one-point lead somewhere. And then the Nuggets outscored the Celtics by 9, which ended up being the final decision. And, you know, like you mentioned, ball movement for the Nuggets. There were 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 players in double figures. Monte Morris, Torrey Craig, Jamal Murray only had 11 after his 48-point performance earlier on the year. Gary Harris was 16, 20-plus from Nikola Jokic and Will Barton. And then Paul Millsap put the dagger, 3-point and 1, at the end of the game. When it, you know, there was a little bit of chance of coming back, and then he just put the knife in the Celtics with his 3-4-point play. So it was a very well-distributed game. A lot of players had multiple assists. As you mentioned, 7 from Jokic, 4 from Mason Plumlee, and 5 for Paul Millsap. Their three big men had the most assists out of everybody. But everyone had a handprint in that game for the Nuggets.
Yeah, I really enjoy watching them play. Like I've said probably too many times that I'm disrespecting this team and I don't think that they get out of the second round, but they are really nice to play. To watch in general, Jokic just has an amazing play style, super pass first, a little bit flashy at times, almost in a way. And I mean, maybe this team is really a threat to go deep in the West. It's just their defense that makes me really hesitate. And the Celtics didn't take advantage of that, minus Kyrie. But I mean, Kyrie can take advantage of any matchup. We'll touch on him going at Joel Embiid later.
Yep. Yeah, I think the one thing about the two things with the Nuggets that worry me when it comes to the playoffs and going farther in the playoffs is their defense, especially at the center position. I believe that there's one position where you can't really get away with a bad defender. It's at the center position. If you look at the top teams, other than the Milwaukee Bucks, the top teams in the nation or the NBA, they have at least a good defensive front court or good defensive piece, whether it be a power forward or center. And you look at the Nuggets, Jokic isn't anything to really write home to mom about, and Millsap wasn't what he was in Atlanta, where he was an all-NBA defender. So that's the one thing. And then also, I don't think they have that guy, that one guy that says, go get me a bucket when we need one down the stretch.
Yeah,
I feel like what helps the team is they don't have that guy, so they spread the ball around well. But every team needs that guy. Every team needs an Isaiah Thomas, a Kyrie Irving. And even though Jimmy the Nuggets Butler. Have Isaiah, a Jimmy Butler who's been actually insanely clutch the last couple of years, you know, one guy that says, look, get me a basket. And yeah, Jokic can score, Murray can score, and Harris can score. But I don't think they've been proven within those confines of really big game, get me a really big bucket.
Yeah, especially down the stretch. Which Jokic has hit some game winners this year, but they're so awkward and off balance.
Yeah.
And at this point, he does them a lot, but I don't know if you're going to get away with that against these great defenders, people scheming against you, in a playoff series.
Yeah, and like especially with, you know, the defense of centers in a lot of the playoff teams, you know, if you go one-on-one with Jokic, you're comfortable with putting Clint Capella on Jokic and letting Jokic make the play. Where if they play a team like, you know, if they're playing a Minnesota, which I know Minnesota is most likely not going to make the playoffs, but, you know, you put them on Cat, and Cat's been, you know, documented to not be 100%, you know, great on the defensive end yet. You know, if you put Jokic on Cat with 5 seconds left, maybe a double comes, and then you can use Jokic's passing ability as well to get an open shot. But like I said, if you're Jokic isn't in that DeMarcus Cousins, Joel Embiid, Karl Anthony Towns tier of centers where they'll dump it off in the post and they'll get a bucket every time.
Yeah, I think just in regards to scoring, because I think he does the passing that he brings is another level. He's a decent rebounder too. Part of that is just our rebounding sucks at times.
Yeah.
But yeah, I get what you're saying. You can't, they don't have that go-to score, especially late. It's, yeah. I mean, we can give the ball to Kyrie and live or die by him extremely comfortably. He has, yes. It's that fadeaway. That's his move at this point. The little just stops at any points and fades.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah. So, yeah, that game ended 114-105. Win for Denver. They swept the series on us now. But probably not going to see them at all this season. I don't anticipate them making the finals, even if we do. The next game that we will probably see later in the season, and I really wanted to sweep the season series here. I want to say that it was going to be 4-0 if we won this, right? We were 3-0 on them before.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I wanted that mental edge on them so bad. And I still think we have it. I mean, there's so many. We lost the game by 3 points, but there was so much to it. And not having Gordon has really hurt. Baines going down, who hasn't even gotten back into a rhythm since returning, really. And
God damn it, Baines.
I know. It's terrible. And apparently it's going to be, what did they say, 2 to 4 weeks?
I'm shipping my foot off. I'm cutting it off now, and I'm shipping it over there. It's happening. He's getting my foot.
I forgot about this. Yeah. Baines needs it, and we need Baines. And then Marcus did...
getting injected.
Yeah.
That was great.
It was honestly great. It was a little bit of a cheap shot, to be honest.
I mean, yeah. If we can dive into that, and, you know, I think they tossed it, they overhead passed it, lob passed it into Embiid. Marcus got there, and they were kind of fighting for it. The foul was caught on Marcus Smart. Marcus was like, there's no way, you know, whatever. And then the next play down, they were setting a down screen for a shooter. I think Redick was running around his screen on the baseline or whoever Marcus Smart was guarding, and Embiid took his elbow and sort of gave Marcus a little nudge, pushing him to the ground, and then here comes Marcus Smart having none of your bullshit and just absolutely destroying Joel Embiid.
Yeah.
Two-hand push. I was all about it. I was all about it. Even my grandmother, who does not watch basketball, was like, ooh, all right.
Yeah. It made me, I was like, oh shit, I gotta rewind. What just happened?
Yep.
And yeah, like you said, Embiid stuck out his elbow a little bit. I don't think it was terrible on Embiid's part, but Marcus isn't going to take shit from him. And it looks like Embiid said something to him after, which knowing Embiid, he probably did. Marcus wasn't about it. And it looks like Embiid threw himself a little bit too.
A little bit. I mean, I feel like Marcus is a strong dude. And if you look at it, Joel was like had his back completely turned. So I think he did catch him by surprise.
That's true.
Did fall over. But, I mean, that was – and that ended up being a turning point in the game because now you have Aaron Baines and Marcus Smart out of the game because Marcus got ejected right after, obviously. And then that's when Philadelphia went on their run, when three-pointers started falling by Redick and Butler and Harris, and then Joel Embiid only had Al to guard him. And then Al was getting tired, and you could see it, Al at the end, who hit a couple big shots at the end, too. And he's been playing very, very, very well, Al Horford has the last, I want to say, month or so.
Yeah.
And, you know, Embiid was just doing whatever he wanted, plus perimeter defense wasn't where it was with Marcus not there, and it just crumbled late. And I mean, with, like you said, with all those factors, with Baines and Horford, Baines and Smart being out, who are probably our two best defenders when it comes to defending Philadelphia, I think that the two, them and Al, are the most impactful defenders when it comes to that team. You saw Baines on Simmons for a while, and then Baines on Embiid, and they were going at it, battling back and forth, which having Aaron Baines is just a blessing, as I've been extremely adamant about that over the last few podcasts. I have to mention how Aaron Baines is the best player ever on at least every Celtics Pulse podcast.
Yeah, I mean, if you're losing a foot because of him, then you better.
I better. I mean, I have 100% jumped on to the Aaron Baines is probably the greatest individual player ever bandwagon. But anyway.
Can't blame you.
Yeah, I mean,
you're kind of late, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, his impact, I tweeted this out, and it was like a serious question. Is there a player in the NBA that has more impact on how their team plays than Aaron Baines does? And, like, obviously, you can be like, oh, well, Giannis. I'm like, yeah, well, Giannis, but, like...
like a role player,
Aaron
almost.
Baines is probably, like, not even that, but if you take all the teams, Aaron Baines, his impact on this, is probably, like, a top 10 in the valuable category of players in the league, because it's been so highlighted and so touched upon of when Aaron Baines plays and plays 15 plus and when Aaron Baines doesn't play.
That's
and
fair.
It just, this team is night and day. I mean, this team would probably be, I mean, if Aaron Baines played 15 minutes a night, every night, they're on pace for cracking 70, high 60 wins. If you look at their, when he plays, they're like, what, 17-2, 17-3 when he plays 15 plus minutes a game. Like, they're on pace to be one of the greatest teams of all time. When he doesn't play, they're a borderline playoff team.
Yeah, he's
and
the
it's
glue
just
guy.
That simple. He really is. And him being out was very effective, because then you have, now Simmons gets to get going because they have players like Terry on him now. And then Embiid gets to get going because he's bullying Al, and Al's.
Or Tice, the worst.
And Tice, yeah. I mean, Tice actually did, for a couple possessions, he did okay. But Tice...
yeah, he just can't, Tice, though, like...
but Tice, yeah, I mean, you're not... I don't blame it. I mean, Daniel Tice isn't going to guard Joel Embiid five times back-to-back-to-back. I mean, Embiid's going to win that matchup at least 3 times out of 5. Which, I mean, is expected, but it's whatever. So, anyway, I mean, those factors, plus the free throw discrepancy that's been talked about a lot, which I'm not blaming it on the refs. I feel like there are a couple of calls I'm like, yikes. But, I mean, Philadelphia got to the rack, and that's what you're taught to do.
Yeah. I don't think it was too crazy biased or anything. Nope. I think there were some calls that were definitely frustrating me, but I don't know. I almost felt like the Celtics got some calls too. Like, it wasn't anything crazy to me. I know, obviously, 43 free throws is insane, and yeah. It actually surprised me when they said the stat, because I knew Embiid was getting there, but it didn't feel like too many others were. But
right.
Just they all did a few times, really. And their starting lineup is really scary. I mean, and then if you can stagger having two of those guys with three bench pieces, I mean, they're only 9 deep right now, which is interesting. They don't give Simmons any minutes. They didn't get Amir Johnson minutes today. Sometimes they play those guys, but I still think this is a good team. They just kind of took turns on who was the scoring. Tobias did it in the first, and then the second quarter, JJ had his own little run, and then Embiid just started to take it over after the Marcus thing, and then they just gave the ball to Jimmy in the fourth.
Yeah, and I think that's the big difference. I mean, talking to friends, especially when the Harris trade went down, you look at the starting lineup, and you're like, Simmons, Redick, Harris, Butler, Embiid, wow. And everyone's like, it's still the Celtics own Philadelphia, yeah. And I'm like, yeah, they do, but this is a different Philadelphia team. I mean, Tobias Harris was probably gypped of an all-star appearance this year with how well he was playing in Los Angeles. And then you have Jimmy Butler, who, you know, his numbers are down, but he's also sharing the ball with three other bona fide stars. I mean, this legit is a 4 all-star team. This is the Golden State in the West, if you look at just talent-wise, or East, if you look at like pure talent, like this is probably the most talented, at least starting lineup in the entire league other than Golden State.
Yeah,
obviously,
I couldn't argue that.
I mean, their depth kills them a little bit because you have Mike Scott and playing valuable minutes, which I'm not a big Mike Scott fan. I love Boban. Boban is certified the greatest player of all time. Look at the PER career. Better than Jordan, better than James. I want to hear nothing from anybody
else.
Him
and Baines are the top two players of all time.
That's fair. That's 100% accurate, and I'm glad that you're agreeing with me. But anyway, I mean, their bench isn't really anything special. TJ McConnell's good. I like TJ McConnell off the bench. But other than that, him and Boban, who I like Boban, other than that, they really do lack bench-wise, where a team like the Celtics at least should be really good on the bench, which their bench decides when they want to play and when they don't. And then you have Toronto, who probably has the best bench in all the league. So that's what really separates the Torontos. Also, Milwaukee has really good depth as well. That's what separates them from Philadelphia. But Philadelphia, they have the players, and it's a different Philadelphia team than last year, almost completely.
Yeah, definitely. And really, I mean, I saw something saying that every game against that Celtics-Sixers series was close down the wire, and they just didn't have anyone that can close. Like, if they can give the ball to Jimmy every time now, and I actually really like Jimmy as a player.
I love Jimmy.
He's a defensive beast, and... Yep. He accepted his role here now, which is different, but it's because he's okay since the other guys are putting in effort. Like, that was really the issue in Minnesota. I think he was right.
Yeah.
He just went about it the wrong way, like very wrong way.
I agree with that, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, if they have Jimmy in that playoff series last year, there's a real debate that they could have won that, and they only got better. Oh, yeah.
I mean, people saying, like, Celtics and, like, if they play the 76ers, which is a pretty decent possibility, depending on where everyone is seated at the end of the day. I mean, people are saying, like, you know, Celtics in four or whatever. I see Celtics in seven. I mean, I still think the Celtics win, but every game is going to be one of those games where you're sitting on the couch and you're gripping the front.
With it would be so much fun.
It's going to be one of those games. You know, then watching Jimmy Butler and Joel and Kyrie Irving battle. I mean, watch the Christmas game. Like, they were all over each other, and it was just so much fun to watch.
I'm all about it. And that's why I really wanted to win this game, because I wanted to keep that mental edge on them where, you know, Joel Embiid saying, this isn't a rivalry. They kick our ass every time, and that he hates this team. And, like, if you could have, you know, we took them out 4-1 last year. Like we said, close games. But if you could have swept the season series this year too, and especially the last game before playoffs, it would have been so nice to have that edge on them.
Yeah, and like you said, like with all those, like we mentioned, the free throw differential and Marcus and Baines being out and Hayward not playing because of concussion protocol and all these different factors, I don't see this as a huge loss for the Celtics. Yeah, it kind of sucks because I believe Indiana lost recently, so we could have, I believe, either tied or jumped them.
Yeah, we could have tied them if we won the game.
Tied them, yeah. So that would have been dope. And it kind of sucks because, you know, Philadelphia just got back-to-back wins against Boston and Milwaukee, and Milwaukee's looking really scary for them because Malcolm Brogdon was a big reason why that train was moving so efficiently. Him being out was actually really, really scary for Milwaukee. But we could probably touch about that come playoff time.
But yeah, that's equal to our Baines, I feel like. I wanted to point that out when you were talking about Baines. Like, it's the glue guy.
Yeah.
I mean, Brogdon's 50-40-90.
And he's chipping in 16, almost 17 points a game. Like, he spreads the floor for them efficiently, especially Bledsoe's having a career year, but I wouldn't still call him a knockdown three-point shooter. Definitely not where Brogdon was.
Yeah.
So, like, I don't know.
And they just lost Mirotić.
Yeah, Mirotić going out too. I saw that. Like, the Milwaukee Bucks remind me of, like, that team that just dominates everyone, but they just get hurt at the wrong time.
Yeah, I can see it.
They just got hurt at the wrong time.
Does this make you want to see them in round two?
Oh, yeah. We're going to see Milwaukee or Toronto, or most likely both, either way.
Yeah.
depending on what seed we get, we're going to see Milwaukee round, unless we get the 3 seed, which at this point I don't know if we do. Like the 4-5 seed matchup sees Milwaukee second round, because even with other injuries, like Charlotte or Orlando or whoever's, or Miami, whoever's at the 8 seed right now, they don't beat Milwaukee even with all the injuries. But Celtics second round, especially if we beat the Pacers, which Pacers have been playing really, really great basketball, but they don't have that star still, and you know, you need that star in the playoffs. I mean, as much as I love that team basketball style they're playing and what's keeping them afloat, you know, I don't trust Miles Turner or Darren Collison to do what Oladipo would. You know, I still don't think Oladipo beats this team, the Celtics team, but it's more of a question. I mean, they almost beat the Cavs last year. They should have beat the Cavs last year. I mean, with that goaltend call, I mean, that missed call, Cleveland shouldn't have made it out of the first round, if we're being honest with ourselves. And Indiana didn't really make any major changes. I mean, all they did was add Tyreke Evans, and Tyreke Evans hasn't played well. But anyway, I digress. Milwaukee doesn't scare me nearly as much as they did now that Brogdon and Mirotić are gone. Depending on if they get back for the playoffs and how they're playing towards playoff time, I think Mirotić is more likely to play in the playoffs, because he's only 2 to 4 weeks, than Brogdon is, because I think Brogdon's, what, 6 to 8?
I want to say it was 4 to 6.
4 to 6, so 2 to 4, then 4 to 6. So, realistically, what was I going to say?
Probably no first round, and you still might see first round Mirotić, but coming off an injury instantly, I mean, you're not going to play your best. And then Brogdon will probably be there second round, because usually a playoff series takes 2 weeks. And but it's the same thing. He's not going to have played for a month, month and a half.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's sort of where I'm at with that. So I want to see Milwaukee. I'd love to see them. I'd like to see them in the second round more than I would the third round championship, because I'm scared of Toronto a little bit, not going to flex.
I don't blame you.
If we can beat a kind of battered up Milwaukee team in the second round, get our momentum, I think with momentum on our side, and if Kyle Lowry shows up and drops 9 points a game in the playoffs like he has the last 8 years, I think that's the best way to go about it.
Yeah, I agree. I'm on the same mind frame there. So we have March Madness starting right now. You want to touch on some of these guys? Because Celtics looking like they're going to have 3 picks, maybe even 4, if this Memphis pick ends up going to 8.
Right. Yeah, so March Madness is obviously upon us, where I am currently watching 4 separate games at the moment. This is the best time of the year. Like, legit, I don't think I even showered today. I woke up at 5 o'clock to watch baseball, and then I took a nap from 9 o'clock till 12. Then I got up, made some mac and cheese, and I've been lounging on my couch like it's no one's business. And I have been watching all types of games. And so with all the draft capital, which Daniel R. Ainge has acquired, we are looking at the moment at pick 14, 22, and 18 to 20. Depending on where seeding falls, depending on who you ask, I think it's 18, 22, and 14 at this very moment. So there are a couple names that I have been seeing that are potentially in that area. And the first one I want to talk about is Rui Hachimura.
Okay, now, Rui, I have heard this.
Yep, so he's in Gonzaga right now, and there's the beginning of the year, he was looking like a top 5 pick. He's a junior out of Gonzaga. There are some mock drafts that still have him going that top 5, top 10 range. There are some drafts that have him going like 27, 28. I think if he's there, or mostly where I see him is in the 10 to 18 range. If he's there at 14, he reminds me of a much better Semi Ojeleye in terms of skill set, where he's more of a knockdown shooter. He's just as athletic, just as big, And I think his defensive potential and versatility, which is what makes this Celtics team at least really, really good last year. I mean, this year defense hasn't really been a thing. But that's what really the Celtics have prided themselves on, switchy defenders.
And so I'm seeing him listed as a four guard. Is he a little more down low based?
He's offensively, he's more of a, if you give him the ball, he will operate in the low post, but he's more of a spot up shooter.
Okay.
For the games I've seen, like he will go in the post and then he'll also spot up. So those are two things that, I mean, if he's just a 3-and-D guy, like, I don't really see superstar potential from him, which I see of, you know, the Ja Morants, the Zions, the RJ Reddishes, or RJ Barretts of the world. You know, the top players. I feel like I think his ceiling is a little lower, but his floor is a lot higher than a lot of guys. I feel like what you get is what you get, and I feel like he has the least amount of potential to be, like, a really bust type player.
Okay, and with the Celtics, I mean, having everything that you need, really, and whatever else you get is kind of a cherry on top.
Exactly.
I'll take a guy that can contribute right away.
Yeah, and I feel like if he entered the league right now, he's better than Semi is right now. And with Semi's option coming up, I don't know if the Celtics have accepted, denied it, or they'll probably wait. The summer probably will know whether to accept or deny it. I mean, depending on what we do with Gershon, depending on what you do with Semi, I mean, if you plug in Ruri right there, I feel like that's beautiful right there. Also, another name to be looking out for, Bol Bol. And now Bol Bol is also very, very interesting, in which I've seen him go in the top 7, top 5. I've seen him go in the late, late first round, all because of, he's a question mark and a half.
Yeah. It's the injury, obviously, right?
It's the injury, it's the body type. I mean, if you remember, he's compared to Porzingis a lot by both style of play and his body type. And you remember all the things of, can Porzingis hold up in the NBA? And you look at, I mean, he's a really lanky, tall dude, and skinny as all hell. And that's exactly what Porzingis was, and even is still. And yeah. Porzingis' body has been battered and whatever. And you saw, now Bol Bol went down with a torn ACL, but at the time he was playing, he was averaging 21 points per game as a freshman. I believe 10 to 11 rebounds a game, as well as three or four blocks a game. And he was also shooting threes from, like, the logo, and he was doing it very, very efficiently. And he was balling out. I mean, I watched him play Syracuse in the first, one of the first mini tournaments of the year, and because I'm a big Syracuse fan, and he dropped 30 points on Syracuse's head in that zone, especially a zone that limits three pointers. He was shooting three pointers like it was his job. He was getting the low post, but it's all injury concerns, and what can he be, and what can he really materialize into, and that's his big question. So that's why he's fallen. I mean, the mock drafts I see most is him from, like, 9 to 10, anywhere to, like, 17, 18, 20.
Yeah.
So if he's in the area, Bol Bol, especially with how much we need a rim protector and a rebounder, I feel like he's more of a rim protector than a rebounder. Sort of like Porzingis, where Porzingis gets a few blocks, but he only gets about 7 to 8 rebounds a game. I feel like that's sort of his defensive/rebounding potential.
Okay.
So yeah, Bol Bol's another name.
Yeah, and I'm good with taking someone that has extremely high potential but is just risky, because it's the same thing that as the last pick, that we have what we need, you know? This is all extra. So if he ends up turning into this crazy player, then of course we're going to make room for him and he becomes part of the future plans. It's almost like a Harry Giles, where the Kings got him at 20.
Yes. Yes. And that's exactly what I think about that, with the risk, but the reward is so high. And people forget, you know, when Jason Tatum, Lauri Markkanen, and all that class that was so coveted, and so Markelle Fultz, the number one player in the country was Harry Giles. People forget that. He was an absolute tank before he tore his ACL.
And twice.
Twice, yeah, two times. Once in high school, once in college, so Yeah. But he's an absolute tank, and he's doing well for the Kings. So glad to see that.
So the name I see after Bol Bol on one of these mock drafts that I've seen thrown around a lot recently, people really like, is Naz Reid
from LSU. Yes, I have Naz Reid on my list.
He's a hustle guy, right?
He's a big hustle guy. I was watching him earlier on today. LSU played Yale, and Yale was coming back. It's a lot of good games. If you guys don't watch college basketball, watch March Madness. It's insane. It's been like 8 crazy games already.
Yeah, I got to hop on this.
You have to hop on this, Doug. You have to hop on this right now. I'm watching Belmont, Maryland. It's tied 71-71 with 3 minutes left. This is insane. Oof. Anyway, back to Naz Reid. Naz Reid, the big boy. 6'10", 250. He runs the floor really, really well. He's a big hustle guy, big energy guy. Gets a few rebounds. He also has a good enough offensive repertoire where he can step out and shoot the three, at least in college. And he hit a couple threes early on today, had like, I believe, finished the game with 12 or 13 points with 10 rebounds or so. He's a 75% shooter this year, which shows that, especially for a big man, showing, you know, free throw percentage is a big indicator that they have the capability of a good jump shot. And Naz Reid can step it out a little bit too. I like him a lot, actually, especially for especially for what I believe the Celtics need, especially in a big man, Al insurance for when Al starts fading away and we look on moving on. Having Naz Reid and Robert Williams, I feel like could be a very good front court tandem.
Yeah, and like you said, we have time. Like, they can work behind Al for a little while.
Oh, yeah. We have so much time, and that's the beauty of having a really good team, and also on top of that, a really young team at the same time, where especially if we do retain Kyrie, which I believe we will, and we stay competitive for the foreseeable future, and we work contracts out well when it's time to pay Jaylen and time to pay Jason Tatum. If we manage this well, we have a really, really good opportunity. Celtics have a really, really good opportunity on their hands to be one of those teams where you just develop and keep developing players and never really fall out.
Yeah. So I was looking at our last pick here, and I remember checking a couple days ago, and it was way higher, and I was trying to think whose pick is this last one, and it's because we lost our last two games. It's our own pick.
Right.
So this one of these mock drafts has it sitting at 21. The other is at 22 here between the two that I'm looking at.
I've seen 22 more, so I'm going to assume 22.
Okay. A while ago, I saw Trey Jones as one of our picks here, and I like the idea, but it seems like he's fallen into the beginning of the second round in a lot of mocks. But I like the idea of a hustle guy with a good assist turnover ratio to kind of just move the ball around a little bit. Like, I've really bought into this Trey Jones idea.
Yes, Trey Jones is another player I had on my list for that 22 pick as well. I feel like he is everything that Terry Rozier is not.
Yeah.
And I've expressed my opinions about Terry Rozier on this podcast. He's been playing well, which is good. You know, just because I have an opinion doesn't mean I want to stay true. Obviously, I want Terry to do well, even though I have been critical of him in the past. But Trey Jones is an excellent floor manager. He can space the floor out, but he'll just manage the game, especially with a second unit. The one thing our second unit needs, just someone to run it. Someone to run it. And Trey Jones would be perfect in that place. I mean, for how phenomenal Trey Jones has been, and probably the most important player on Duke, other than Zion, but you can even make the argument that Trey is more important than Zion is, but how, you know, what his value and his role on that team is in Duke, and managing all those superstars and managing everyone's shots and doing a really, really well, good job on it, on top of being one of the best defenders in the NCAA as well. I mean, the only reason he's not up in the top 10 is because I don't think his ceiling is that high. And I feel like it's much like Tyus Jones, and when Tyus Jones didn't really improve a whole lot since coming in the NBA. I mean, his shot's been a little bit better. He's learning the game more, but Trey doesn't have that potential to be that 25-point scorer or even that 20-point scorer, where he might cap out at like 12 points, but he'll get a lot of assists, like 8 to 10 assists. So he might be one of those guys. He might be like a Fred VanVleet, a Corey Joseph type.
And this sounds amazing to me as a backup point guard. Like, I would take Tyus on the team right now over Terry, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I would too, especially with, especially like you mentioned, with the playmaking. He's such a good playmaker, and he's such for how he reminds me of a Tyler Ennis when Tyler Ennis was in Syracuse, and how young Tyler Ennis. Well, obviously Tyler Ennis didn't pan out, so obviously I don't want NBA Tyler Ennis. But Tyler Ennis for when he was playing, and that was when I really started getting to Syracuse basketball the year prior, and he was like that first freshman class I started watching. You know, everyone was his poise at such a young age and his ability to play make and keep the ball, you know, not turn the ball over and make good clutch shots and just be a smart basketball player. That was the same praise Tyler Ennis was getting. And that reminds me a lot of what Trey Jones is now. And if Trey Jones just doesn't go the NBA Tyler Ennis route, I think that's going to be perfect. Especially at 22, after you already get potentially two guys where you can develop and they have higher upside, having that safety blanket pick right there at 22, I think there's nothing better.
Agreed. I've been all for it. And do you see a potential in, I don't think that you can move into the top three with Williamson, Morant, Barrett, but do you see potential of packaging these three to move like 4 to 8, somewhere in there?
The one team, actually, let me just pull up that mock draft, and this is what I was talking about earlier. The one team that I look at and I go, is there potential to trade up with? And it depends on what they do with Bradley Beal.
I agree.
Number 8 with Washington, I think, is the most realistic pick to go trade up for. Where if you look at the Wizards situations, they suck. They're not good. Obviously, that's why they're picking 8. But if you look at what they have, if they do not trade Bradley Beal, and they have another year of John Wall still there, well, with the second John Wall injury, his torn Achilles, this makes the possibility go a little down, a little bit even more. But if they don't trade Bradley Beal and they still have Wall for a few years, if you want to get a couple players that can develop just like what we were saying with the Celtics. If you can get a couple players like a Bol Bol, like a Trey Jones in the later half in the draft and sort of build it up that way instead of getting a potential star, you know, if you move up to 8, names like Cameron Reddish, who's been slipping, which I don't think he slips to 8, potentially you can ensure yourself that Rui Hachimura, if you really, really are down. Jarrett Culver is a name that's been floating around in that top 5 to top 10.
Do you like Keldon Johnson?
I don't like Keldon Johnson as much as a lot of people do, but Keldon Johnson isn't bad. I mean, I wouldn't mind Keldon Johnson, but I'm not as high as I am on other players. Okay. I know Kentucky's weird for me. Kentucky prospects, I either love their prospects or I hate their prospects. Like, yeah. I wasn't a huge, like, Nerlens Noel I loved. But Willie Cauley-Stein, I didn't.
Yeah, and but then there's like a De'Aaron Fox, Gilgeous Alexander. Yeah.
It's like every other year, I either love their group of players or I don't like their group of players. Last year, I didn't watch a lot of Kentucky, but I loved De'Aaron Fox. I thought he was I think I had 4 can't miss prospects in that entire draft, and he was one of them.
And he's been killing it.
Yeah, and he's been absolutely phenomenal. I love De'Aaron Fox. Keldon Johnson's a name also. DeAndre Hunter from Virginia is also in that conversation. Romeo Langford, who I have on the list for a potential at 14, because he didn't really do that great. But I love Romeo Langford. I think he's the most complete offensive player in the draft. I mean, he hasn't really shown the 3 ball this year, but I feel like with his jump shot, he can score at all 3 levels. And once he gets going and learns the NBA game, he can really become a problem, especially a shooting wing, which the Celtics kind of need too. He's a point, sort of a combo guard, so he could run that second unit as well. He's another name to look out for around 14, or if you move up to 8 and you really, really want Romeo Langford. But the one thing about this draft is, other than the top 5, there's not really a player worth trading up for.
And who's your top 5?
My top 5 would be Zion, in no order, Zion, Morant, RJ Barrett. I'm still really like Cameron Reddish. I still think, even though he has kind of sucked this year in regards to what we thought of, I think he's still really good. I've seen players like Darius Garland in there, even though I'm not 100% sold on Darius Garland up there. Probably Jarrett Culver as well. I mean, I haven't really watched a lot of Culver or a lot of Keldon Johnson or a lot of DeAndre Hunter this year, which have been reported in those top. The top 4 is just the Duke guys and Ja Morant. I feel like they're the top 4 guys.
Yeah.
And then obviously add another guy like there.
So would you rather the Celtics probably stay put, get a little bit of depth, and that way you have options that, you know, you strike out on someone like a Bobo, you still got 2 other guys that could pan out?
I do too. I believe that's the way it could go. A couple other names also. Like, with all the other names, Kevin Porter is another name. Jonte Porter, Michael Porter Jr.'s brother, who was out with ACL. Nasir Little. And also Tyler Harrow. I feel like those are some other names you can get at the later part, of either the 18 or 22. And I just feel like if you can get... I would take Bol Bol, Tyler Harrow, and like Nas Little, for example. Or either Sekou Doumbouya, who's sort of like this year's top international prospect, him as well, you can put in. But I would take those 3 or a combination of all the names that we've had. I'd take that for this team unless you can get a Cameron Reddish. Depending on how he falls and how well he does in the pre-draft workouts and everything, I would take any combination of those 3 over a Keldon Johnson, over Romeo Langford, who I'm still really high on Romeo Langford. I would still take a combination of those 3 guys over one guy.
Yeah.
Unless you can get into the top 3, top 5.
Fair enough. Was there any other guys you want to touch on before we start closing out a little bit here?
I think that was it. I mean, with Tyler Herro, I think you get a knockdown shooter, which is, like I said, what the Celtics need. With Nas Little, I feel like it's sort of that Stanley Johnson, Josh Jackson type player, which those guys really haven't panned out, but that's defensive guy you can put on the bench. Jonte Porter has a really good potential. He tore his ACL, hasn't played this year, but he can step out and shoot and has some good defensive potential as well. So he could be a guy if he falls at 22. And Kevin Porter from USC, I feel like he's sort of that Romeo Langford guy where he has so much offensive potential and versatility where they could, if he's there at 14 or even 18, I feel like you fall. So those are all my guys I believe that the Celtics should go after and should be looking at come April, come July. I wish the draft was in April. That'd be dope.
Yeah, give us something to do a little earlier.
But, you know, in before the Kings pick gets number 2 in the lottery and we get RJ.
Oh, man. Whatever. Yes, please. So what? That sounds like a Cody hot take right there.
I so wish, but Cody's hot take has been absolutely awful.
It has. So are we leaving it out? Is that what you're saying? We can't do that.
I don't think we can, but at the same time, like, I kind of want to, like, say, you know.
Just give it a March Madness, not Celtics related.
I'll give a March Madness. My March Madness pick. All right, here's my one team I have going on a little bit of a. Actually, let me pull up my March Madness bracket. So I can, because there's one team. Oh, there are 2 teams. Watch out for Arizona State. Now, 3 teams, Arizona State, Nevada, and Oregon, to go on some runs. At the end of the day, I have Gonzaga winning it all. I don't trust Duke in the clutch. I do not. So there we go.
You don't. Hot take.
I don't feel like they have a player they can go to in the clutch and get a bucket. Zion obviously. I mean, but Zion's very offensively limited. I mean, if you get like a big body on him, which I mean, okay. It's hard to do. I'm not saying, but I feel like there's that. RJ Barrett has shown that he's took a couple shots in the clutch and has failed on all of them. But I don't. If it's a tight game, especially with the free throw struggles, they're one of the worst free throw shooting teams in the ACC. If you get them in a tight game against a really, really good team, it's upset city. Just like they were against Syracuse earlier on this year. Just like they were against Gonzaga in the beginning of the year. Zags take it home, finally. Go Bulldogs.
Okay. That's the hot take today. So Gonzaga screwed.
Yep, so Gonzaga's losing first round of the 16th seed.
Exactly. So, all right. Well, we're going to keep an eye on all these March Madness games. And the Celtics got a nice little upcoming schedule. They play the Hornets on Saturday. Gets a little bit easier now. The big games to look forward to are two games against Indiana to close out here. Looking to hopefully get that 4 seed. And thank you for listening to this episode of the Celtics Pulse Podcast. We will be back with you in not too long, a couple days. Have a good one, guys.